around than in a regular suit, or that clunker you're in.
Clunker?
Gaeta bristled inwardly. This suit's seen me through a hell of a lot of weird situations, pal. Wanamaker clicked the connecting clamps to rings fitted into the torso of Gaeta's suit. In the vacuum of space, there was no sound, but Gaeta felt the hooks clicking into place. He was flat on his back now, staring up at the return pod package looming above him. Fritz came back on the radio and went through the checklist with Wanamaker, who unhooked the hand-sized camera from the belt of his suit and played it over Gaeta's supine body, giving Fritz visual proof that every clamp was properly in place.
"Very well," Fritz said, sounding reluctant. "The connectors are set."
God forbid the Fregado should ever say he's satisfied with anything, Gaeta grumbled to himself.
"Admiral Wanamaker," Fritz called. "My congratulations. You've made up 70 full seconds of our timeline."
"Thank you," said Wanamaker. Gaeta was too stunned to say anything. Wanamaker rapped lightly on Gaeta's helmet. "Good luck, buddy." Gaeta nodded again, even though he realized Wanamaker couldn't see it inside the suit's heavy helmet. "Thanks, Jake." Wanamaker disappeared from his view. All that Gaeta could see now was the ceramic-coated return pod standing above him like a massive trip hammer, ready to squash him flat. Beyond it, the stars, unwinking eyes staring down at him.
"The stars," he thought. "What would it be like to fly to Alpha Centauri, or one of those stars that has Earth-sized planets orbiting around them? Are they really like other Earths? What a kick it would be to get there first, before anybody else, and see for myself what's there."
Dimly he heard Fritz and Pancho talking through the countdown.
"Fritz and his fucking timeline," Gaeta thought. "We've got enough lag time in the schedule to do everything twice, just about."
Then he heard Pancho.
"On my mark, separation in 10 seconds.
Mark." 9, 8, Gaeta counted with her. At zero, he felt a slight nudge in the small of his back. No sense of motion at all until the aeroshell yawed 40 degrees as programmed. Saturn slid into his view, big and beautiful. Gaeta realized that this might be the last time he saw it. 28 May, 2096. Titan Entry. Clamped to the aeroshell, his hands and boots wedged into cleats built into the ends of the X-frame on which he was stretched, Gaeta lay on his back with nothing to do except think. His backpack contained the parasail that would float him down to Titan's surface, plus the life support system and the thermionic nuclear generator that powered his suit.
"The nuke can run the suit for weeks," Gaeta knew. "But there's only a 12-hour supply of fresh air and water, and I've gone through almost half of that already. The recyclers can stretch that to a couple of days if I need to."
He shook his head inside the helmet.
"I'm not staying inside this Iron Maiden for a couple of days," he told himself.
"Get down to Urbain's misbehaving machine, plug in the package of nanos, and get the hell back out again. 1 hour on the surface, then back to the transfer ship and home to the habitat. Back to Chris. I'm staying down there just long enough to do the job and get credit for being the first man on Titan. In the headlines again. One last stunt. The best and the last."
"Aerodynamic heating has begun," Fritz's voice announced, flat and cool. "You should begin to experience some turbulence shortly."
"Smooth so far," Gaeta said. He could see that the stars were drifting past now, and one side of the rocket pack above him looked brighter. "It'll get cherry red before we're through," he knew. The shell began to shudder, and for the first time since they'd gone into orbit around Titan, Gaeta sensed a feeling of weight.
0.5G, Fritz's voice said calmly. 0.7, 0.9.
The front face of the rocket pack was glowing now, and Gaeta could see tons of flame-hot gases flickering past the rim of the aeroshell. Good footage for the vids, Gaeta thought. I hope Berkowitz is getting it all down and transmitting it back to Earth. The shell began to rock like a leaf tossed into a stormy sea.
Gaeta felt nauseous.
Jesu Cristo, he thought. Don't let me upchuck inside my helmet. All around him, the rim of the shell blazed with sheets of white-hot gas. Gaeta knew that the superconducting coil built into the rim of the shell enveloped him in a magnetic field that deflected the ionized gas away from him. Still, he sweated inside his suit. The shell started to shake so violently that Gaeta's vision blurred. The rocket pack hanging over him seemed to be on fire. He squeezed his eyes shut and tightened his grip on the cleats built into the bathtub, holding on as hard as he could.
"They can't be nanomachines," Cardenas said, staring at the photomicrographs Negroponte had put onto her benchtop screen.
"But their nuclei are crystalline," the biologist said, pointing with a long manicured finger. "They don't look biological at all."
"Not terrestrial biology, that's for certain." Negroponte looked distressed.
"Dr. Cardenas, I..."
"Chris," Cardenas said automatically.
"Chris, then."
Negroponte bit her lips, then went on.
"Nadia's back on Earth, being congratulated for having found a new form of organisms in Saturn's rings. But maybe they're not organisms. Maybe they're machines. Nanomachines."
Cardenas shook her head stubbornly. "They can't be nanomachines."
"Why not?"
"Because nanomachines don't exist in nature. Somebody has to build them." Before Negroponte could reply, Cardenas added, "And we sure didn't. Besides, they're not like any nanos that I've ever seen."
"But what if they were built by someone? Someone other than us?"
"Intelligent aliens? Machine-building aliens?" Cardenas tried to scoff at the idea, but could only manage a weak snicker.
"It's not impossible," Negroponte said. "Those giant whale things in Jupiter's ocean might be intelligent. And there's that artifact in the belt."
"That's nothing more than a rumor."
"Is it?
Isn't it?" Negroponte got up from her laboratory stool stiffly, as if she'd been sitting there too long. Gesturing at the display screen, she said firmly,
"They are not biological organisms. I'm convinced of that."
"Despite the paper you and Wonderly wrote?"
Nodding. "Despite our paper."
Cardenas looked from the biologist's distraught face to the display screen showing the crystal and lattice of the ring creature's nucleus, and back to Negroponte again. "Look, you're dealing with extraterrestrial biology here. It doesn't have to look like our own."
"The Martian organisms have a recognizable analog of DNA in their nuclei. So do the airborne biota of Jupiter."
"They can't be machines," Cardenas insisted. "Who built them? There's no intelligent creatures in the solar system capable of that level of technology except us. And we certainly didn't put those things in Saturn's rings." Negroponte replied immediately,
"Perhaps whoever built them has gone."
"You mean they're extinct?" The biologist shrugged her shoulders.
"Or perhaps they were visitors from another star system, and they seeded our worlds."
"With nanomachines?
And life?"
Cardenas sank back onto her lab stool. "Sheer speculation, Yolanda." Yet, she felt a tendril of fear shimmering along her spine.
"TNOs?" Tavallaro looked both surprised and annoyed as he sat across the cafeteria table from Holly. She nodded enthusiastically. "Savinger put the idea into my head. There's zillions of them. That's where comets come from." The cafeteria was half empty at mid-afternoon, but still there was enough clattering of dishware and chattering of conversations to force Tavallaro to raise his voice. "But Neptune's orbit is more than 20 astronomical units from here," he objected. "That's twice as far as we are from the sun, for Christ's sakes."
"I know,"
Holly said as she chomped heartily on a pseudo-burger. She gulped down her food and went on. "I thought it was too far, too. But then I looked into the astrogation program." Tavallaro's face fell. "Don't tell me.